Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast, the podcast where we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope that it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors of sexual abuse too. We hope that you find it interesting, but more than that, if you are a survivor of sexual abuse, we hope that you find our discussion empowering.
Hello, podcast listeners. I'm Alan Collins. I'm the partner who heads up the abuse team of Hugh James Solicitors. And welcome back, podcast listeners. And it's also great to have back with us Dr. Michael Salter, who is an associate professor at the University of New South Wales. Welcome back, Mike.
Hello, Alan.
Thank you very much. And today we're going to be discussing child soldiers. And I thought this would be an interesting topic to discuss to this podcast because there has been a recent UN report on humanitarian abuses out in the Yemen. And one of the issues raised by the UN in its report is in respect of the use of child soldiers. Child soldiers basically means what it says, which is youngsters being used by governments and guerrilla bodies and other such outfits as soldiers in armies. And this is a practice that is basically beyond the pale, but it still happens. And so I thought we'd have a little talk about child soldiers and how it is that here we are in 2020, and despite all the strictures of the UN, we still have this tragic issue of child soldiers. And there are lots of issues in relation to this, the fact that children are recruited, how they're recruited, and the impact on the children who get used as soldiers to fight the battles of adults. So any initial thoughts, Michael?
I think it really speaks to the relationship between sort of socio-political and civil conflict and then child abuse. You know, child abuse is often seen as, you know, a personal injury, you know, not necessarily the realm of politics. And when we're talking about child soldiers, we're really talking about the ways in which the mass traumatization of generations of young people feeds into civil conflict, and also the intentional traumatization of children as part of state and semi-state conflict. And so I think it really is sort of a paradigm piece for us to sort of sit back and just recognize that child abuse is not just a social issue, you know, it is a political issue. And in and of itself, to have jurisdictions in the world where we have entire generations of young people deeply, deeply traumatized, what does that then mean for political stability, for social stability in the future when you have these sorts of conflicts? Really just countries eating their own young. Incredibly disturbing.
Yes, and this UN report says that, you know, the children involved need justice, but it looks to the sort of governments and institutions that are responsible for allowing this to happen or causing it to happen to deliver that justice. And that just seems so naive, if not basically wrong. I could use stronger language, but I better be careful. It just sort of exposes the futility of the UN producing reports like this, because I just think, well, how on earth can the children affected by these outrages expect the governments that have allowed this to happen to them or caused it to happen or are directly responsible for it happening to deliver justice for them? It just seems absurd, to put it politely.
I think one of the issues we face is that the instruments of international law and the instruments of international human rights law are very slim. They really do assume some level of compliance by nation states. If we start to think about children as real global citizens, if we start to think about children as citizens, appropriate subjects of global justice, then where do they sit? If you know, we typically, both nation states and I think also global bodies like the United Nations, they assume that all children will have some kind of caring intermediary. You know, states more or less devolve childcare and child protection to parents. And if parents default in their duties, then really the state offers, you know, we can say certainly not enough alternative protection for children. But at the international level, international legal instruments and bodies assume that nation states will act as caring intermediaries for the children in their countries. And where nation states are incapable of doing that, if they don't have the infrastructure to do that, if they are torn by civil conflict, for example, then where do children sit in the conversation about global justice? And I think that, you know, child soldiers is just a very abject example of just how vulnerable children are when these formal legal instruments, when their assumptions are transgressed, and we just don't have the assumed back end that's going to provide that support and care for them.
Exactly. And I appreciate it's tough, and in many respects, it seems like an impossible conundrum to solve. But I think for me, looking at these issues, it would help if the right questions were asked in the first place. And what I'm getting at is the children concerned, the children who do get abused, whether child soldiers or children in refugee camps, children who've been abused by aid workers or peacekeepers, whatever it happens to be, they should be asked, what would justice look like? Because everything's looked at through the lens of the adult, whereas these questions should be asked through the lens of a child. And children, we know, can have considerable insight into the issues that are affecting them. And I just think that an attempt should be made to look at these issues through the children themselves. And if we have made an attempt to do that, we might actually learn something, and we then may actually have the makings of some policies which in the end would provide a voice for children, would provide them with a mechanism to access justice, whatever that might be, from their perspective. I just think that we look at these issues always through the lens of the adult. And I think that's where the UN and governments and bodies concerned with children's welfare issues tend to go wrong. And that's why we keep on seeing these outrages from, you know, as in the Yemen.
Certainly in low-income countries, in countries characterized by significant civil unrest and conflict, I think the agencies that are making a real difference on the ground, it is civil society, it is non-government and community organisations that are operating at the grassroots. So even though, you know, formal structures and formal political instruments might not be able to penetrate into these jurisdictions because they are so chaotic and there is a lack of those formal mechanisms to intersect with on the ground, I think where good work is done is the community organisations that are being built from the grassroots, and often with development funding and with aid funding, that are able to work with young people, you know, through their own culture, through their own religion, through their own language, to start to build up, you know, models of demobilisation and rehabilitation for these children. And for, you know, rehabilitation for children, for child soldiers, you know, it is a very culturally specific set of questions, because the sorts of abuses and violations that child soldiers are subject to are also quite culturally specific. On the ground, we see the ways in which cultural practices are turned against children, quite intentionally forcing children to engage in, you know, very harmful, brutal behavior that contravenes cultural and religious norms, so that the child feels completely dislocated from their society and instead bonded to the warlord or bonded to the perpetrating group. And so there's a very, you know, subtle process that has to be gone through in order to demobilize the child soldier, de-traumatize the child soldier, and then promote reintegration back into their society. And that is done by community organizations, but they need the resourcing and they need some basic level of stability, social, political stability, to accomplish that.
Well, on that profound and thoughtful note, thank you, Michael, for that, as always. Thank you very much. Thank you, podcast listeners, and please do join us at our next podcast. So thank you very much. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favourite podcast player. If you'd like to speak to us about something you've heard today, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.